Welcome to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I'm your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team. My hope is to shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. Great teachers and strong systems need each other. When a teacher tries something powerful in the classroom, the system around them must make it possible to continue. And when the system is built well, it shows up in small daily moments that students feel. So what happens when those two things work together, and what happens when they don't? That's exactly what we're going to dig into today. And if you lead the MTSS work, or you sit on a resource team, or you support students as a specialist, this conversation is definitely for you. And to help us explore it, I'm thrilled to welcome April Rimfrey from Rimfrey Educational Consulting. April works with international schools to build inclusive, sustainable systems of support through UDL, thoughtful teacher development, and a deep belief that every learner belongs. So let's get into it. Welcome to the podcast, April.
Thanks for having me, Larissa.
Well, I'm so excited to have you. I know we have a mutual friend through Mitch Weathers, who is a friend of the podcast. And so I was so excited that he was like, you need to talk to April. And so glad to have you on today. First of all, I would love to you work with schools all over the world. And so I would love for you to answer this question, just as for our audience to get to know you a little bit. If you could bottle one thing that you've seen a great teacher do, the kind of moment that makes you think, like, this is magic, and you could sort of hand that off to other teachers or, that you meet, what would it be?
I can think of two things right away. And the first one is routines. And the second one is when I see this deep understanding of co-regulation that happens between the adults and the young people. That's what I would love to bottle. And you brought up Mitch, so I will talk about the gospel of Mitch Weathers and how classroom routines are what build executive functioning skills, not the other way around. So when I see teachers putting into practice this idea that there's one place in the classroom to turn something in, not multiple places, kids aren't asking questions of where are the pens and pencils, where are the rulers, where are this and that, those type of routines are what makes me giddy inside and so excited when I see that in a classroom. Because you see immediately that kids feel super independent. And that's really what they're all working toward, is that pushback that we often get because they're seeking independence. And so that leads into that deep understanding of co-regulation and understanding and seeing a classroom that's built around the students' nervous system and not ours as the teachers. So in order to do that, you have to know your own sensory profile and what you're seeking, what you're running away from, all of those kinds of things. And then being able to help students understand their own sensory profiles and their nervous systems. So when I see classrooms that have the right balance of those two things, it makes me so happy.
I love that. Well, you were talking about classroom routines, and I think it is kind of magic when I'm thinking back into my days as a teacher, and when students walk in and they know exactly what to do, they get out their notebooks, they start their bell work. You don't even have to prompt them. It's pretty magical. It's pretty magical.
And
it's
like
learning can start.
That's right. You've greeted everyone at the door and you don't even have to say anything else. And those executive functioning skills are on fire immediately. And they felt your calm the moment they walked into the classroom, right? Yeah. So to me, that's where the magic exists.
Well, okay. So I know that you work with, like I mentioned, you work with schools kind of in, nearly every continent. And so a theme sort of like when I dug into some of your work, a theme that runs is that classroom practice and school systems really depend on each other. So when you walk into a school, what tells you whether a a system is genuinely supporting what teachers are trying to do in their classrooms versus quietly maybe working against them.
You know, sometimes it can be difficult to put your finger on what that thing is, because when you walk into a school, you get the sense that it's a well-oiled machine, or you get the vibe that things aren't quite working well. And one of the first ways that I can tell is the way that I hear teachers talking about students, right? And so that our students, that kind of conversation is, I'm really attuned to that. Or when people talk about those are strategies that another teacher has, that's someone else's job to work on those skills. That's when my antenna go up and think, okay, something's not working together here. And we always talk about, you know, Vygotsky's zone of proximal development. And we talk about students being in their zone, but I think teachers can also be in their zone of proximal development, because everybody's at a different place in their teaching journey. And there's ebbs and flows when things are happening in your life, right? You're going to be on, or you're going to be in different places. But there's this notion that a really great friend of mine, Mona Stewart, talks about, this idea of when you're in your zone of proximal development, you're in this state of calm alertness. And that calm alertness is kind of just projected all the time in schools, if that's where the school is. So you can have students in this zone, you can have teachers, and then you could have the whole school is in their zone of proximal development. So when I walk in, if I see adults stopping to have time to listen to kids, that's an important one. And then the other one is when I'm in a classroom, there isn't like this frenetic get through stuff. It's, I know where I need to get to. I know what the most important standards are, and everybody knows how to get to the top of the mountain in their own time. And then a little bit deeper in would kind of be that teachers know the process when they have concerns, and they trust it and they respect it. And so you only can get to that state when all three of those groups are in their zone of proximal development. And who knew that we were going to still be talking about incredible research from 50 years ago? But there's some great stuff from the 60s and 70s that we think we always need to have new research, but the really good stuff is established. We just got to make sure we continually go back to it. And I think Vygotsky is one of those big ones.
Yeah. Well, and I was, as you were talking, it was just making me think about, like, when you mentioned how teachers talk about students, or even just talk about what's happening in their classroom. I think that gives a great indication of just how they feel, like if they're, like we talked about before, that feel that regulation, they feel the ability to be calm because there's not chaos, or there's not uncertainty or distrust. I even like that you mentioned distrust of the system and protocols and procedures to support students. Because I do think that, like, that's where you feel the angst of educators when they know there's something that's not working, and it's frustrating because they may not have control over it, but it impacts the work that they do in the classroom.
And it impacts their students, right? They feel that with their students. And I don't doubt that all teachers have students' best interests at heart. But what happens is the trust starts to get lost when it's chipped away at little by little by little, when they run into holes in the system. And so one of the things I like to tell leaders is, when you have new staff coming in at the beginning of the school year, use them as a consultant. Really, like, they have fresh eyes on your process and your system, and they're going to see where those holes are almost immediately. So collect that information and use it to help you start to notice where all of those holes are. So there's got to be the system of feedback. And I think that feedback loop is something that builds a sense of trust and respect. So having listening conferences on a regular basis, what's working really well, where are these points of friction? And then when you start to talk about how you're going to pivot in and create, you know, better systems, you can say specifically, we heard this from you, and that's why we're making this change.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's versus a leader who says, well, you're new here, you don't understand.
Right.
And so really actually taking it as they have fresh eyes. They're not, you know, blinded by other things. They can see the holes. I like that you phrased it that way. Because I do think that oftentimes it can be easy to feel defensive when someone comes in and points out, here's all the things you're doing wrong. I like what you talked about, like with new teachers. You know, I think that I want to talk a little bit about some of that development that leaders can do. Because so many of our listeners are MTSS leaders, or, you know, I would love to talk a little bit about how they can maybe strengthen the whole system. How does maybe even starting small with one teacher's classroom, how could that maybe ripple outward and shift that larger system? If you're thinking about, oh, where could they start with this? You suggested start with new teachers, but like, can you maybe like talk a little bit about how you've seen the impact of that?
So I grew up in Iowa, in an itty bitty town of 2,000 people. And it's really kind of shaped my worldview, which is, I've lived in Switzerland for 13 years now. So my husband always says, you can take the girl out of Iowa, but you can't take Iowa out of the girl. And so I often think about MTSS through this lens of growing up in Iowa. And people tend to focus on, in Iowa, the harvest, because there was this, the harvest season was a massive thing. Our school holidays tended to be around harvest season, or there would be kids gone for 2 weeks because they had to help with these kinds of things. So the harvest was the most visible thing happening around me in my little town. But those farmers knew that the harvest is actually one of the smallest parts of the work. And the real work happens long before anything ever gets planted in the spring, right? They have to test the soil, they have to replenish nutrients and make sure all their equipment is serviced and pay attention to the weather patterns. And so they're creating systems that are going to sustain growth through the whole year and make sure that short harvest season is really great and strong. And so by the time the seed even gets in the ground, they've already made 100 little decisions to make sure that goes well. And so I think it's a bit like MTSS. And one of these big misconceptions about MTSS is leaders assume that they're there to intervene when one individual student is struggling. But really, our work is there to feed the soil all along, to make sure the soil that everyone is growing in is full of nutrients, right? So when the MTSS leader invests in one individual teacher, they're not just helping one classroom, right? They're influencing maybe even hundreds of students over time that filter through that teacher's classroom. So my question often is, you know, like, what are those foundational practices that every student deserves to experience every single day, regardless of whose classroom they walk into? And so I'm not starting with, should I support one teacher or should I look at the system? It's like, how are we looking at the whole soil? How are we going to feed that soil? And how are we going to make sure we have strong professional learning communities where teachers are solving problems together instead of in isolated pockets? Or where can we create, like I was talking about, those predictable classroom routines that are going to naturally build those EF skills throughout the day? So it's investing in those, the ecosystem changes, right? Not thinking that working with one individual teacher is not worth our time. That's how we make sure the soil is primed. So that I'm just thinking about problem solving together and moving from one classroom and one experience to the whole system is really valuable. And so that MTSS leader's job is not to run around rescuing individual plants.
Yeah.
They're there to be kind of like the steward of the soil and making sure that it's rich and healthy and constantly cared for. So growth stops being something we have to force and starts becoming something we can really expect and trust over time.
Well, and I think it goes hand in hand. Like, you can continue to work on the larger system. Like, I'm thinking is like the priming the soil for growth is you're supporting the system as a whole in the sense of providing high quality materials for your tier one, creating a master schedule, having the right kind of having interventionists available, like doing some of those larger system work, but also spending time and seeing it in action in the teacher's classroom. How does that tier one delivery, the core instruction delivery, actually look like with this teacher and support? Like, I feel like it can go hand in hand, that work has to, but it is good, I think, sometimes if you're starting small, even just to look at what do routines look like, even just supporting the work of a teacher who maybe is struggling. I think of it this way as an MTSS leader. If you're looking at your data, you're also pinpointing where are the places where I need to push in and have that individual support. Where are the places where we can utilize PLCs and the collaborative community? Because I think, and if you have insight into that, then you can really like support. You can actually help. Because if there, I was going to extend the metaphor to, if there's a spot in your field that you need to like, right, to see to, you should do that.
That's right. Right. So what are the things that you're always going to keep coming back to as a staff? We're always going to talk about classroom routines. That's foundational. We're always going to talk about co-regulation and making sure that we have calm in order to share the calm. And then maybe you could even throw in Marzano's 9 instructional strategies for effective teaching and learning, right? And then that's your foundation. That's feeding the soil with the correct nutrients at all times. And it doesn't matter if you're teaching, you know, if you're teaching chemistry at a really high level or you're teaching grade one, you know, all of those things are applicable to every single classroom in your whole school or your district or your state or your everything. So making sure that innovation, I think innovation gets a bad rap sometimes, and I don't think innovation has to be something new every time. It has to be, how are we continually feeding the soil to make sure we can innovate?
Say more about that. I love that idea about innovation doesn't mean something new.
I think we lose a lot of teachers when we come back to school in the fall and we say, okay, this year we've got 5 new initiatives, right? And I think 2 or 3 of those initiatives should be staying the same at all times. So initiative to me means our focuses, not what's the new buzzword, what's the new flashy thing we need to go run toward. It's how are we ensuring that we continually look at our own practices to make sure we are creating that healthy, rich soil so we can sow the right seeds in the right places. And then when we have that common language amongst each other, it's easier to have the conversations in our PLCs. And then it's easier to say, I have all of these things for this student, right? For all of my students. And therefore, it's easy to say when April or Larissa need additional support, because the foundation we know for a fact has been created across the board.
Yeah. I think that is so important to name, because going into, you know, the fall thinking or into a new school year, that's when teachers feel the most overwhelmed. I often experience that of just like, we have so many things to do and I don't have enough time to set up my classroom. Or I think really being very, as a leader, being very aware of what your individual educators are experiencing and making sure that they feel supported from day one, in the sense of, I'm not going to add more to your plate. I want to support what we're already doing. And so many MTSS leaders that I talk to, they've realized as they begin to examine their MTSS system or their infrastructure of supporting things, they're like, we're already doing amazing things. This is not anything new. It's just thinking about how do we come together as a system to support the work? Because often all the good things are happening in silos in one individual classroom or in this interventionist work. It's about bringing everything together and cohesively working.
Yeah. So identify what's working really, really well already and build on that instead of, you know, giving them unintentionally, of course, but giving the message that we need to start from the ground up.
It actually makes me think great things come about when you build on what you're already doing.
Giving the message that we are acknowledging all the great stuff that's happening here. And that's going to continue building that trust and respect. Right. And so then from there, then you can start to identify your friction points. And that's when you can take in lots of different information from people in different roles, including those new teachers with the fresh eyes. Where are the friction points? And when you have those new teachers bringing some of those things in, you'll think, wow, I didn't even think about that. But only if you're open and available to taking in that information rather than that defensiveness that you were talking about. Because it's a really easy place to sit, especially if you've been somewhere for a long time and you have lots of institutional knowledge and you know what was there and what you've built.
I do think that, like, in all of this, I think it's really important for leaders to get their eyes on what's happening in the classroom and sort of just like that classroom observation. So I'm curious about how, if thinking about MTSS leaders going into classrooms and observing, that can kind of feel evaluative for teachers. How can resource teams or even just MTSS team leaders use some of that observational data to strengthen both the individual teacher's practice and maybe the system as well? I mean, what are some practices around that do you think that leaders should know?
One of my favorite things to do with teachers is have them take data on themselves versus, you know, we always take data on our students, right? And choosing one practice that feels kind of like, this is going to age me, but like the dipstick test, this is like when I used to change the oil, when I learned how to do that when I was a kid in my parents' garage and didn't get things on there properly and the oil ended up all over the floor of the garage. But I distinctly remember having to pull out this long stick to check, you know, where we're at. And then you just wipe it off and it's gone, right? And so it's meant to be like this little moment in time. And so thinking about how we can take data on ourselves and our own practices on a regular basis, I think is a really important piece of the equation because it does feel evaluative when someone else comes into your classroom. So what are you going to be able to do to evaluate yourself first? So just getting comfortable with, for instance, just taking tallies, like, yeah, I got to my closing routine today. And trying to get yourself into a routine of getting to your closing routine every single lesson, or trying to aim for 80%. In the States, I was a special education teacher, right? And we always, for IEPs, we always talk about 80% accuracy, and that's what we're always aiming for. But I think we should hold ourselves accountable also for that 80% accuracy. So if keeping track of the time at the end of the lesson is hard for you, maybe that's a goal you set for yourself. I want to get to my closing routine 80% of the time and take data on yourself. And so then the other thing I see working to the advantage of schools is having peer observation cycles rather than just instructional coaches or other leaders coming in to do observations, having your own peers and you being able to invite them in rather than April's going to show up in your room at 8:30 on Thursday. It feels different. It's almost like you're the one asking for feedback rather than being required to get feedback. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Anytime you're required to get feedback, it will always feel evaluative, I think. So, you know, and I also think anytime a principal steps in to observe a classroom, your students are not on their normal behavior. Like there's not it's not an accurate picture, I think, in some ways.
Yeah. But that, to me, what that means and shows is that leader is not getting into classrooms enough.
So yeah, that's, yeah.
Right. And so one of the things I recommend to leaders is to always lock in 30 minutes a week of walking around the school. So it becomes natural for people to see you around. And there's other leaders that I knew that do 15 minutes a day, right? And just because they want to keep their face moving around the school. So it isn't the April just walked in the room, right?
Yeah, I do love a peer observation. I think that one, it allows you to, one, as a teacher myself, if I'm observing, I get to see different practices that are like, oh, I should try that in my classroom.
And it's never the big things, is it? It's always those little tiny things that you don't even know that you do that someone else might pick up on and go, I'd like to try that.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I love how the way they got that attention of the students, or that's a really unique way to address the question. Or even just, even sometimes is even seeing a student that I have in my class and somebody else's class and like, oh, that's interesting the way they respond to that. And so I do think that that peer observation is so important for helping. I think it provides avenues for collaboration, for support, for other teachers to feel supported and maybe seen by their peers. And I do like it when it is an invitation, because I think that it says it, because sometimes it can feel unsafe as an educator if someone just pops in that I don't have a strong relationship with, or, you know, so I think that starting there where it's like people, you know, whoever your buddy is, invite them in at some point, you know?
Yeah. You know, when you say that, it makes me think of, you know, what if I've had leaders say, well, what if they always invite the same person into the room? Like, great. That's okay. That means you're establishing comfort first. It's a bit like when teachers say, well, what if the student always chooses the same option when they have a, you know, menu of options? That's why you gave a menu of options so they could choose, right? You can't have a, like ways you could, I'm going to give you options. However, there's a contingency.
You can only choose this so many times. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, if you're allowing teachers to choose who they want to come and observe their classroom, no strings attached. None at all.
Yeah. Well, and I think over time you can expand your choices, or, you know, I just feel like anytime if you provide a choice, allow them whatever they want to choose.
And so then what usually comes out of that naturally is the teachers come up with what they would like to have happen next. You don't have to then push it. And so that's the key, is to help this kind of, again, plant the seed, feed the soil, and then things start to bloom from those experiences.
Yeah. There's so many more questions I want to ask you. It's so hard because I was like, I wanted to ask a little bit about, and maybe you're going to give the same kind of answers you were before, but if you feel, if MTSS team is overloaded and they feel like there's so many things that they want to change or fix in the system, what are some first moves that they should make?
So I just had this conversation with a school that's starting on their MTSS journey. And first of all, start with what's going well and then talk about friction points. And don't assume that you know as a leader. So we need to be able to look macro and micro, right? Big and small. But one of the things that I think it's really helpful for leaders to start with is listening conferences. So that's where you, rather than a survey, which, do you remember how many surveys we would have to fill out as teachers? It feels different. It lands differently when there's a 15-minute listening conference. And I know it can take a lot of time, but I think it's time really well invested where you actually sit there and listen, and all you start with, what's going well and where's the friction or what's not going well, right? And you just sit and listen and take notes. That's it. And so I think that you get a lot of bang for your buck by doing listening conferences. The other thing that comes to mind is, and you've brought this up already, but starting with tier one. Starting with a really solid foundation of what's happening in all of your classrooms, because what I see happening frequently is that the MTSS framework and team lands on student support services. So it gets this sense from a lot of the teachers in the school that MTSS is owned by student support services and not the whole school. And so when you start with having the conversations about tier one, that's everybody, right? And so some schools kind of narrow down what that's going to mean to, what are some immediate strategies that are going to help us move the needle forward? So top 10, you know, everybody likes a top 10 list. What are our top 10 strategies that we all commit to doing really well in our classrooms at all times?
And if that's overwhelming, start with the top 5.
Yeah.
You know,
and here are our power standards of those top 10.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And then you can start to really get a sense for where progress is being made. But my friend Jim Guyona Eldis always talks about being able to check your own progress as like you're standing in the middle of a river. And all of this data is rushing by you all the time. And the data is on your students, it's on yourself, it's on your colleagues, it's on the whole school. And your job is to stand there with a bucket and take a scoop, take a look at it, and put it back in the river. But that bucket is one thing. You can't measure everything, nor should you, right? And so it's like the canary in the coal mine. Choose the one thing you're going to really focus on measuring to be able to tell where things are progressing. So as a team, choose what you're going to take data on for the first semester, for the first trimester, and stand in the middle of the river, take a scoop, look at it, and then realize it's not, it is a moment in time, right? It's not the end all be all. But you continue to look at it, and it's not the, oh, let's jump over here or jump over there or do this and stick with your plan for a good period of time to be able to tell if you are making good progress.
Yeah, I think that's really important because they say that an MTSS implementation takes at least 3 to 5 years to really see the fruits of that. And I think that many times if something's not happening in a year, they give up on it. Let's try something else. But I think, you know, when you're looking at your MTSS, even if schools have been doing MTSS for a long time and they're trying to improve, like pick one area of focus of like this year, we're really going to document on behavior and we're going to do some really great behavior interventions and move that. You know, one high school I talked to in Nebraska, they use a check-in, check-out as kind of their tier two overall intervention. They're like, we don't have space for, you know, a bunch of academic interventions or all these things, but we're going to start here and we're going to check in with the students that are struggling academically, behaviorally, or emotionally. We're just going to have a tier two check-in, check-out. And it's kind of amazing they're able to address a lot of issues just even through that simple check in, check out with students.
That's your SEL piece of the equation, right?
Yeah.
And the other part, you talked about what are we going to do for this year, but I think it also really helps to think further ahead so you can say to people when they come to you and say, why aren't we working on this? Why aren't we working on that? You can say that's in our year two and year three plan, right? And so you're giving people a longer look down the track, which can provide some comfort that, yeah, we know that's on our program. It's coming up. Or when people bring something up, you can say, you know what? We never thought about that. Thank you for bringing it up. So it's always sitting in this place of learning and and ability to take in feedback. And even if you don't agree, thanks for bringing that up. We hadn't thought about it. I'll take it to the team. You know, something like that where everybody kind of has the line that they say when something like that comes up. And I feel really confident when I have something like that in my back pocket when I get caught off guard.
Uh-huh.
Yep. So I don't come back with defensiveness.
Hey, thanks for letting me know.
Exactly.
I'll make sure that we talk about that in our team, or I'll bring that back to the
team. Or let me write that down real quick. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always, I think, receiving feedback. That when I moved into sort of more leadership role in school, I think I wasn't prepared for the amount of feedback that would come at me.
Yeah.
That I didn't necessarily need to do anything with, or that I needed just to sit with for a while. Like I didn't need to immediately respond. Because a lot of times as a teacher in the classroom, you receive feedback for a student and you're adjusting as you go. It's quicker. But as when you step into that leadership role, the feedback you get, you don't have to always move as quick. Sometimes you do, but sometimes it's like, hey, thanks for making me aware.
Right.
You know, it's information for me to process and use.
Yes.
April, I just think that you're such a valuable resource. I mean, I'm going to share your website and information in our show notes so that our listeners can look at. I mean, I will look through your blog. You have lots of really great information and article, and I know you send out a newsletter. And so I hope that our listeners can kind of gain something from following you and get some more information to support the work that they're doing. So thank you for being here and just sharing your knowledge. Any last nuggets that you would like to share to our MTSS leaders?
Well, I'm just going to say have a great summer and try your best to shut down a little bit. And I hope you can do something that feeds your soul along with, you know, the learnings that we all have on our list for the summer months. So enjoy that.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Larissa.
Thanks for listening to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds. Go ahead and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget, if you are enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcast on iTunes? This helps others find our podcasts and lets us know how much you love what we're creating. Branching Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchingminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn at Branching Minds.